Greetings in the name of our Savior. Do you have a friendly God? Why do I say that? A little bit ago, I was back in this room just for a little while to be with God, and I noticed that I have a, what do you call them? Not an email, a voicemail, and managed to get in and find it. And I have a dear, dear brother by the name of Calvin Nisley. And him and I talk back and forth sometimes. We don't often email. I don't know what. I get those terms mixed up. Not texting either. I don't do that too much. But anyway, he left me one this morning, and it just blessed me. Now, Brother Dale talked a little bit about standing at the graveside or sitting at the graveside or when John Dee's son died, and you had that experience too, didn't you? Calvin just lost his wife. She was filled with cancer. And I want to talk about children. And Calvin, Calvin and Mary didn't have children. And they were very close. And through the death of his wife, we buried her. They're part of our church at home. And we buried her, James, was it 2 weeks ago? And Calvin called me this morning and on voicemail and said, Abner, I just wanted to talk to you. He said, I'm driving on the road by myself. And he said, I'd like to ask you, Abner. And he said it this way, and I'll interpret. I was told not long ago I shouldn't speak in tongues, but he said, Alvin or Abner, hast du ein freundlicher Gott? Do you have a friendly God? And then he said, Abner, if you do, and I'm sure you're going to say yes, then tell the people about it. So I'm telling you, it just blessed my heart. That's Calvin. And I just really enjoy the way he talks to me and how he has looked. And then talking about what John and Dale did, I want to go to my message, but talking about that, my wife and I have had the experience of losing four or three of our son-in-laws at a fairly young age. Our oldest daughter lost her husband. They were in Honduras and in the mission field, and he picked up something that came into his lungs and then invaded his brain, and he died from it. And then the second daughter and her husband were in Africa when he started getting a headache, and they brought him back. They lived in Texas before that. They brought him back and operated. He had a tumor in his brain, and then he died from that later. And then the third one, our third daughter, her husband, one morning just got awake, or our daughter Ida May got awake, and Danny, which is Manny's brother here, just rolled over and moaned, and he was gone. And you know, I used to have a hard time to know how to relate when I went to a funeral. And that hasn't gotten much easier. But oh, my heart just goes out so much more when I stand at sides. And sometimes some of us, oh, and by the way, now I might get you confused when I say Manny's brother was married to our daughter, but Manny's son is married to our daughter. Another one. And when Danny, which should be Manny's brother, our third daughter's husband, died, we were sitting at the viewing. And you know, sometimes we can't. I felt so much for this young man that came walking. But we can't. We go in the sight of death and in the sight of the grieving ones. I have. I'm telling you my experience. And we hardly know what to say. We would like to say something that brings comfort, but we just don't know. And this young man came walking up, and Mark, of course, was my fourth daughter's husband. So he would have been, the other three had passed on. So Mark and I were sitting beside each other, and this young man came up, shook my hand, then he shook Mark's hand and just looked at him. And I could see in this young man that he'd like to give some comfort. But you know what came out? He said, "Mark, you're the next in line." And I looked at Mark, but Mark, he's... You don't stop him, right? I mean, Mark is a quiet man, but I just love him. He's making, he's using God to give me some beautiful grandchildren. And Mark just looked at him and he said, "Yes," he said, "I know, but I'd do it all over again." I'll never forget that. And so we face these times, and sometimes we're unable to really relate to the circumstances. But God knows our hearts. All right. As I often have to do when I preach, I have to make corrections. There is no 28th verse in Genesis chapter 2. I'm sorry, brethren. I should do my homework. Or at least write my notes down better. It's no use to tell you. I just said this, that I was so blessed at the many men in this seminar that were listening when I preached. And came to remind me about this verse. So thank you. Another thing I'd like to say, I tend that when I say something, I don't know why, but it sometimes it seems it comes out sort of funny to the people. And I felt sort of convicted yesterday when I used John D. and my truck. I sort of felt convicted. I didn't want to cause a lot of amusement. It was just something that fitted so good, and I just couldn't resist it. All right. The first part of my message this morning. Now, fathers, I want you to be honest with yourself. The first part of my message, I'm going to speak on something that I have hardly ever heard anybody speak on. And it grieves me that they don't. But I'm going to tell fathers who are here, who have young sons with you here, that I'm going to get explicit in some things. And if you feel uncomfortable in having your son, if your son is not the age where you have met with him on some of these issues of life, and you want to tell them or take them out, that's perfectly all right. But I knew that I was going to speak to a group of men. And I'm basically, this has to do with you young married men. But I just couldn't get away from God message to me to tell you this. So my first part of the message, sort of it's not on child training, but it has to do with children. And I just feel with an audience like this that you will allow me to speak this. But if you feel uncomfortable with a son being here that's young and you don't feel it's good for him, I personally don't see anyone here that should not hear this. Brother told me just before I came up here that we come from a background where it was pretty hard for our fathers to tell us, "I love you, son." I never heard that from my father. Never. I believe he loved me. But it was hard, and it's hard sometimes to us, for us, even yet from that culture, to let our children know that we love them. Amen. Now, I don't feel I have a lot. I don't feel my wife and I have a large family. We have 7 children. The reason I don't feel that way is because I just have half as many as my father had. Now, some people would say we have a large family, but we don't feel that way. My wife and I never did. That we were happy and satisfied. And what I say this morning to some of you, and I'm going to tell you, and Brother James, you'll bear with me on this. Brother James and his wife have 2 children, but they buried 3. I have a son whose wife was told the last son she had, you cannot have another one or you will die. The last one, they almost lost her. And so I want you to understand what I'm saying this morning. I'm not saying in the perspective of everyone, but I am becoming very concerned in the Church of Jesus Christ what is happening with this, quote, Planned Parenthood. And I want to talk on that a little, if you will allow me. Correct me if I'm wrong. Come to me and tell me there is no verse 28 after the services, if you feel that I stepped out of my bounds. And I'm not saying this morning that all you men have to look at it like I do. We have choices. But here's something that I feel so moved to speak on this is that I don't believe that some of our young men realize what they're doing. And wives. All right. Let's continue and start. And before I do, I would just like to cry out to God. Brother David Lapp, would you just ask God to be here? Amen. All right, I'm going to ask a question before I start. And I'd like you to respond to this by raising your hand and look into your heart in this when I ask the question. Are your children an asset or a liability? Are they an asset? Woo! Are they a liability? Now be careful. I have a tendency to trap people. But as I saw the arms go up, I realized that you brethren feel that children are an asset. And I'm glad that I saw that. But, I like that word, but. Ephesians chapter 4, what a beautiful but. When it says all the things we were, but God. And many places in the scripture, it's so beautiful. But I have to put a but in here when I see all these hands. A lot of professing Christians will quickly respond that children are an asset. Professing Christians. A lot of them will. And most of us are able to immediately answer the question. And I saw this morning. I wondered what's going to happen. But without much thought, when I said, are they an asset? Hands just came all over the place. Without much thought that they're an asset. And so while the answer of this question is easily determined and communicated by most professing believers, I have concluded, and please, I allow you to come to me after service over dinner or even keep me from eating. I allow you to come just so you don't make me stand too long. But I have come to the conclusion, brethren and sisters, that for the majority of Christianity, and I use that term rather loosely when I say Christianity, they really don't mean that children are an asset. And you may ask, how do you come to such a radical conclusion? And I'll tell you this, I come to that conclusion by the size of their families. Am I wrong? They're not an asset. Because if I have something that's an asset, I want a lot of it. Now you say, Abner, God told Adam to replenish the earth. He didn't just mean one family or one man. I know that. My concern, brethren and sisters, is that we, as children of God, feel that abortion is murder. Do you know that in the Scriptures, God was very vexed at Onan for throwing his seed on the ground? You may say, young men, young married family, you may say, Abner, you're past the, you know, you've had it. And so you can preach it. But I have felt this way for years, that I've been concerned. There's a big movement going through the United States of America and in other countries on Planned Parenthood. And I want you to understand, brethren, and I open myself up. Somebody asked me yesterday whether I get insulted, and I said, I have people tell me already, Abner, don't you get insulted. And well, you know, if you're a fellow that, and John D. said about me and him, and I don't know if John is that much that way or not, but when you open your mouth a lot, you're bound to get caught wrong and get insulted. And so you, after a while, you just sort of bear it, you know. But you won't insult me if you come and tell me that what you preached this morning was not right, not biblical. If you want to do that, that's all right. I am voicing in this first part of the message, better say the first part. I have some other things I want to say. But I have a conviction in myself that it is not good what is happening. And what it is we're taking the things of the world and are bringing it into the church of God. And it grieves my heart. Just had a little grandson again the other day. Anna Joy was in Haiti for 5.5 years. She delivered about 128 babies. Some out in pickup trucks. Some down in the riverbed. I could go on and on. And then she came home. And some boy got her heart, won her heart. And she had her fifth baby. And I rejoice. I have another daughter who was 46. Here some little while ago, and she had a little baby, 46 years old. Now I know people say, wow, what is wrong with that? Please, please, I rejoiced with my daughter. I can't help it. If anybody should have a big, large family, it's God's children. Those children have much more opportunity for eternity and other children. All right, I want to go back and talk a little bit about this. When people immediately respond that their children are an asset, what most of them really believe is that one or two or maybe three children with several years in between the arrival of each one, that's an asset. And please, please, dearly beloved, if you have two, three children and that's it, don't I am not. I'm just telling you what's going on in the world, I feel. And it bothers me. What most of them actually believe, that it's nice to have a family for a few children to raise up, carry on the family tree, and come visit them in old age. And Calvin and Mary don't have that. And Calvin feels that. And him and I talk about that often. You know, I was asked to speak at Penn Valley Retreat. I don't know if you know where that's at or not. Sometime a few years ago, it's probably about 2 years or 3 years ago, I was asked to speak basically what I'm asked to speak here. And in my message, and maybe you won't agree with me, but in my message, I told the audience that I have 7 daughters, and every one of them, and from the oldest to the youngest, if they don't see me or when they come to my place, the first thing they do, they come in and say, "Daddy, I want a hug." And I said this, and I said, I know some people feel that uncomfortable with that. And I said, I'm not saying that, but I love my daughter's hugs. After the services were over, there was a man that came up to me and he said, "Brother Abner, did you ever read about Lot?" And I was shocked. It hurt me that this dear brother would feel that's why I want to hug my daughters. It hurt me. And I said, "Yes, I read about Lot, and I read about Sodom, and I read about Gomorrah, and I don't understand those things." But I said, "Brother, my girls are going to continue to get hugs from Grandpa." Do you think 10 children are an asset? You still go on, huh? Harry Warner was buried not long ago. He had how many? 22? 22. That was from 2 wives. Hey, listen, I'm not here trying to say, you know, we ought to have this many children. That's not what I'm saying. So I better get on because I have other things I want to say. But, you know, when you ask if 10 children are an asset, well, I noticed when I said, "Are 10 children an asset?" there was a few hands went up. Or are they a liability? But the response to that question was a little slower, wasn't it? And I understand that. But actions always speak louder than words. And let's face that anymore, the basic truth is that a majority of professing believers acknowledge in one way or the other that the use of birth control is acceptable in the Christian circles. And I have a problem with that. Now, let's talk a little bit about birth control. There is some birth control that I feel would be all right in circumstances. But what we don't realize, dearly beloved, is we people believe when the words of David said that, it just went out of my mind. In my mother's womb, I was... help me. That's right. That I like that. In sin I was conceived also. I that's not really what, but what this other brother said here, I don't hear very good. So when I ask for help, give it to me loud. But you know, we believe that abortion is sin. Do you realize that most birth control pills will only kill after conception? And a lot of Christians have their eyes closed to that fact because it militates against their American dream. And that burdens my heart. And I thought, Lord, here I'm going to speak in front of a group of young men in America that maybe in innocence are doing some things. Can you give me the spunk, that's a Dutch word, by the way, the boldness to speak out and then let the Holy Spirit come into our hearts and deal with this issue? I have had plain people. Now, this hasn't happened in the circles we're in now. But I have had plain young couples come to me and just resist my view on this 20, 30 years ago. And I'm not saying I'm right, but I believe I'm more balanced in the Word on that issue than many of these that are trying these things. I want to go on. This thought of many professing believers that are in use of birth control is evident in the absence of an outcry against the practice within the church, and it's evident in the size of the families. Now, I'm glad to say that I have not run into that a whole lot, but I see it coming where our young people are being taught that it's rather unhandy to have more than four or five. And oh, what a blessing when I see a mother and father that love their children, and the children don't burden the mother more than the father. In other words, the asset of working together, the father works with the mother. I tell you something, I have a problem. And I know you say, well, your children are raised. When I would sit in church at home years ago, I would sit sometimes with three of my daughters, and we were separate seating. But I come in with mixed seating because I sat my daughters on both sides of me. Some fathers think, well, the daughters belong to the mothers. That may be. But fathers, if you have six daughters and one son, they belong with you too. And I see this type of thing come creeping in. Now at home we have started, and I know some of you might not approve of it, but at home we have mixed seating. And I have come to love it for the sake of the family. I'm a family man, I know that. But I have come, and they say, well, our people in the older times, they didn't do that, and so I understand, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing one way or the other. But I have learned to enjoy, to watch a father having, maybe even forced, to now he's going to sit right here when this little Emma, little Johnny, or whatever it is, gets worked up, daddy's right there, not sitting in the other side of the church house, and I'm getting way off the track. Alright, let's go on. Forgive me, brethren. I'm a little shaky about this thing. And not in my heart, but I don't want to grieve anyone this morning. I would just like to wake us up to what is going on. It's certainly not what I'm saying this morning. It's not the assertion that a woman should not rest the womb between children. Don't get me wrong. I don't believe that. I don't believe that God demands that this is a thing where we systemize this whole thing. God has a way of working through these things. But I'm going to tell you this. When we allow ourselves to go to the world system to regulate our family, I believe we are heading for trouble. I just believe that. After all, men, there is something like abstinence. And I speak this, my dearly beloved, of having faced this myself, and I know it can be done. But I wanted children too, and my wife did too. And I'm so thankful for what God gave us. What is intended is, what I'm intending to do this morning is to cry out against the use of birth control devices such as the pill, which can result in abortion, and the surgical destruction of the reproduction system for convenience. You hear that? I'm saying that is done for convenience, so that we can do what we want to do. Now, I'll tell you something. If you're in that state, young man, young woman, I know the women aren't here, but if you're doing that and are in that, there's someday going to come when you will not have what I have now. You know what that is? Well, most of you know that I have a problem with my sciatica nerve. And my girls call me from another state over and over again. Hey, Daddy, how are you doing? You're not going to have that. It's such a blessing when you get older and you realize that God gave you this family not only as an asset when my wife and I were bringing this family up, but now that the children are gone, now they're such an asset in the support. You say, well, is that why you have children? I never thought of it at that time. But it happens. And so I would just like to tell you that they are an asset. If you really consider the mechanics of birth control devices, you will find that most are designed to terminate or abort pregnancies, not prevent them. And that's where I have a big problem. We just close our eyes, we accept the world's methods, and that's what goes. And brethren, abortion is murder. Let it be heard. I was up in Canada some time ago in Manitoba. No, it was not in Manitoba. It was in Ontario. And I was told, Brother Abner, they have a problem here in Canada that if you preach out of the first chapter of Romans 1 and 2, or out of Romans 1 and 2, and you get too explicit, they can put you in jail. You know, I have a spunky spirit sometimes, and I almost felt that if I go to Canada next time, that's what I'm going to preach. Well, that's not a right attitude. But I want it to be known that on this subject, I want to be like Daniel, who when he was told you can't pray, I love the words where he said, he did as he did aforetime. I don't want to do it as a reaction. I want to do it as a necessity to cry out. The church has abandoned what the Bible really says concerning the subject of childbearing to embrace the world's standard. And everyone has to make their own decision concerning this issue. That's what they say. I talked to some young people. Well, that's everybody's own decision. I'm going to tell you something that may be a little amusing to me, but to you, but it wasn't to me. When I was a bishop in the fellowship churches, we would meet twice a year as bishops and discuss problems in the church. Usually it was problems. And one time, after I was a bishop for about 6-7 years, we were sitting together and one bishop raised this question. What about women shaving their legs? And I thought, boy, you're getting into territory I don't want to get into. And then they started discussing it and recommended each of us to go home and admonish our church on it. Brethren, I don't know if I'm different or not, but I wasn't about to do that. Now, I'm saying this, what some people would say about what I'm talking this morning, is they would say, well, that's just like that. It's none of your business. But I say, it's none of my business whether some man's wife shaves her legs. That's none of my business. But it is my business if we're going to ruin our conscience by taking something that causes an abortion. It's my business. And I have to speak out. I have some more on the subject, but I'm going to let that, I'm going to be on unfair to the rest of my message. All right. I'd like to talk about children. And I've labeled this message, Godly Parents Can Have. I didn't say will have. Godly parents can have godly children. I believe that. It's not a guarantee that when the children are not godly, that the parents weren't. That's why I say what I did. But I'm going to say this, that if you and your wife operate on principles of humility, Brother Dale, if we operate and I fail in that, oh, I went back to this room here after I couldn't hardly leave and I wanted to go back and just talk to God and I made a mistake, turned the speaker up so I could hear the rest of it. But I believe that godly parents can have godly children. Now, I'm going to start someplace in the middle of my message and bring it up to the front lest I forget it. I have children, not little goats. Brother, I forgive you if you call your children kids, because some of you were raised and that's all that it was called. I'm not saying it's sin, but I, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, did a strange thing for me. I decided I'm going to raise some goats, have some pasture, and I bought about 4 or 6 goats. And of course, a buck. And you know what happens. After a while, I landed up with 50 of them. And I began to get a real glimpse of why Jesus said, the goats go on the left. They were fun. I enjoyed them. But oh my, I couldn't let anything out in the pasture that they didn't crawl all over. I couldn't do anything that they didn't mess into it. And a fence has to be perfect. I'm raising children, not goats. I tried to do different things to make those goats behave. Useless. The best thing that worked was the auction barn. A couple years ago, I made it work. Got rid of them. Did I want to do it? Not really. I enjoyed it. But I have children, and my grandchildren are children, not goats. Why am I saying that? Just to make us think a little bit. You know, we get so loose with our language. I do. We say words, you really think about them. That's not the best. And so, if you say kids in front of me, I won't nail you. But mine are children. All right. Godly parents. Oh, where do I stop and start? Now, maybe you think Abner's going to go up there this morning and tell you when you ought to spank your child, and how big the stick should be, and whether it ought to be a rubber hose or a plastic pipe or a piece of tree or a 2x4 or whatever. You may think that I'm going to come up here and tell you what you need to do. You may think that I'm going to come up here and tell you to get books from Larry Christensen and the old Baptist preacher that's long gone. I was just a young father when I got his book, and I appreciated it so much. What's his name? Pardon? John Rice, thank you. I enjoyed that man's teaching on the Christian home. It was such an inspiration to me. I enjoyed the preachers from Ohio coming to our little group in Lancaster County and Melita. I didn't know how to do this thing. My wife and I got married. My father was a disciplinarian, and what's the problem with us so many times? I did what I shouldn't have done. I reacted. And so the Lord gave us a boy. I was in 1W service when we had this little boy, and my wife and I, we were so happy. We had this little chap. But one time I came home, And Michael, the little boy, my dear Jim of my life, was just screaming. And he wouldn't quit. And I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Now understand, the only teaching I had was what I saw in my parents' home. And so I tended to train children by default rather than being exact. But this time, I finally said, Anna, I'm going to have to do something. What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to paddle him. You know what happened? Because I didn't know how to paddle. I didn't know how to pray. I didn't know how to assuage the difference that was going to arise. And so I landed up with a crying wife and a crying son. And I thought, well, this is not the answer. And so I went through some, but now looking back, I just value the teaching that I got. When I became a child of God, and brethren took me to the Word of God in messages and in counseling, this is where the answer is found. Now I'm here to tell you tonight, I'm here to tell you that it is not according, or it is not wrong to get some of these books and to get the Godly Home series. It's not wrong. It's not wrong to read, I forget his name already now, John R. Rice. It's not wrong to read these different ones. There's some I would say it's wrong. But there are some that are really straight. But if you take that book and think, or whatever book it is, and think I'm going to do everything just like this book says, I'll guarantee you, you'll be disappointed. And why? Because you are a separate, different, exclusive family. You can't put your children into a mold. They're different. My brother Mike and I'm going to tell you something. Don't laugh. But my brother Mike and I were raised like twins. He was a year and a half older. He was a little shorter. He's a father of David Lapp's wife. He was shorter. I was at three. I was as big as he was. And so my father brought us up as twins. But there was a marked difference between my brother and I. He had a year and a half on me in age, but he had many years on me in brains. I was a stumbling lout. My brother was very smart. And I learned this, and I found out that Mike is exceptionally good in making things. We usually made our toys. And he was very good. My father brought my brother Mike and I, each one. You know what an express wagon is? You put your knee on there and you've got a hot rod. Well, and we had a lot of concrete walks when we were growing up. And my brother Mike wasn't just satisfied with a hot rod. He took these two wagons, or he took his wagon, and he put fender skirts on it, duals, radio aerial. I don't know why my father allowed it, but he did. We were Amish. And then he would make deals with me, because if I would have made it, it would have looked like something ready for the junkyards, not some supermodel. And so he made deals with me that Dad would always give us work to do, but he also allowed us some time to play. And then he would make a deal. If I do his work, he'll do my wagon. And that went on for years. I was too dumb to realize what's happening. But I got a wagon that was souped up. And then one day Mike decided in his thinking that he could make wings that you could fly. And he started telling me about this. I said, Mike, it'll never work. Yeah, he believes it will. So he made this set of wings. I don't know how big they were. They were pretty long. And he made it to fit me. And then he told me he wants me to go up on the barn roof and jump off of the barn roof. Hey, I'm sorry. I went up on the barn roof because I believed him. I had a lot of confidence in him. And I could just picture him yet, standing down there. And he said, when you jump off of the barn, keep your arms straight. Don't let them go up. You know what? I know, you might have thought I have a little wisdom, but it might erase everything. I jumped. And my arms went straight up in the air. And I crashed down in the ground. And I busted his wings. And the next 5 minutes was spent trying to get away from my brother Mike because he was so angry that I broke his wings. Are children different? Big time. Sorry for the amusement. I have to tell you that. Children are dear to me. But fathers, I'm sure if you have more than one, you'll realize they're different. And you cannot use them all the same. You have to realize they're different. Now, what is our responsibility as parents? Well, the Bible would tell me that in Proverbs chapter 22, in verse 6, that we need to train. The first thing I'd like to touch on is teach. And I could get into a word definition here, what's training and what's teaching and what's this and that. And I don't want to get into that. But godly parents will teach. Ungodly parents will also teach. And that's a shocker. If you're godly, you will teach. If you're ungodly, you will also teach your children. And that is why we have to be so careful that what we teach lines up with what God wants in the family. What does it say? These words which I command thee, you're to teach. Deuteronomy. These words which I command thee, this day shall be in thy heart. And then it says in the next verse, in Deuteronomy 6 verse 7, that thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children. I believe this is a husband and a wife corporate working in the family of God, that they do that. And I'm speaking to the husband because I believe fathers, sometimes our wives are with the children a lot more than we are. But it is still our responsibility to see that the teaching gets done. Whether we do it or our wife does it. It is our, you cannot get away from that. According to the Word of God, it is your responsibility. Don't you blame your wife if your children don't turn out right. It is your responsibility. Now, there is also clauses here. And I don't have time to go into that. But we are to teach our children. And where are we to do it? When thou sittest in thy house and are all tied up on the internet. Whoa! I believe it's one of the hardest things for us to regulate if we have some of this media stuff and we lose out on our teaching programs. I didn't have that when my family was growing up, and I'm glad I didn't. And I can somewhat excuse myself now and say, well, you know, I can do this or that. I'm not an internet fan. We have it. But I don't use it very much at all. I like it that we can email back and forth. And we were talking about Ken Miller, and I know Ken Miller personally. He's a dear brother. And you know, the internet allowed me to keep after where he's going. And so I don't throw this away. But brethren, do we realize, when I say the internet, emailing, do we realize how much time have you ever kept track of how much time you spent? I tell you, I confess something to you. I did something. Right here it is. Oh, by the way, I have it on mute now. I learned since I'm here how to do that. I bought that when we went to Africa because we wanted a phone so I could call back. But I'll tell you what, brethren, I am concerned. I get to homes where they invite visitors for a noon meal maybe, and you're sitting in there, and all at once you look around. What used to be a time of sweet fellowship, it's a time of... which I don't do very good. Something is wrong, brother. And we're going to lose out on that precious time that we need to have and don't have enough of to teach and train our children. When are we to do it? According to Deuteronomy, it would tell us that we should do it when we sit in our house, when we walk by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. I was in Africa, and I can understand where they could teach their children when they're laying down, because all of them sleep in the same room. We don't have it that way, but we need to apply a principle here. We can't always do it just according to the letter, but we need to apply a principle. I'm just going to have to go on. The godly parents, to have godly children, will follow Proverbs 22, verse 6. They will train. How do you train? Training is different than teaching. And I'm not a good person with these type of words. I'll give you an illustration. Does a dog have a brain? Wow, I might get into a debate here. Does a dog have a brain?
Yes.
Can a dog think?
Yes.
Can he decide to do good?
Yes. Yes.
Dale, are you hanging in here with me? I might have to ask you to come up front here. I do things like this. I kept myself in a corner. Let me tell you a story. Some years ago, my youngest daughter, Violet, I got her a puppy. It was a Boston Terrier. Cute little chap. Pepper, we called him. He could not come up to the house, but he could come in the basement and the car garage, the two-car garage down below. I made a little door for him to slide in and out so he could live in the garage. He had a nice living quarters. Now, Pepper was a dog. My brother Roman and I have had quite some discussions about this already, whether a dog can think. I say they can. I don't believe they have a conscience, and yet I'm not sure. Now, I'll explain to you why. Pepper, I would always put my shoes in the basement when I go up through. And sometimes Pepper just loved the smell of my shoes, or something anyway, and he would get my shoes and take him back in a corner and work on him. And I tried to train him. You don't do this. And I determined that I would train that dog and not take the shoes away. Well, tell you what happened. Sometimes we'd come home and we usually drive our van as a family into the garage. And I could tell immediately if Pepper was disobedient. If I would drive in and Pepper would quick go back in under the stairs and sit under the stairs when I crawled out, and I would go over and say, "Pepper, what were you doing?" And if he didn't, he would just wiggle waggle all over the place right when we got out of the van and just want to talk. Now, I don't want to talk about dogs. But I will say this, I never really trained Pepper. Now, I don't know what you can say. We trained him in a lot of ways, but not as far as my shoes were concerned. And I feel that sometimes we think that we have trained our children when we have taught them certain little things that they do, but the training itself shows that there is a complete rebel in that child yet operating, and all he's doing is manipulating us, his parents. And let me tell you something, brethren. I speak this from experience. Children are good at manipulating if they find out that they can get away with it. Why? Here we go yesterday, because I believe they inherited something. Brother John, thank you. All right, we'll go on. God bless you, brethren, all of you. But we need to train. The second thing, I don't want to do this tomorrow. I have something else tomorrow. But the second thing is that the Father will provide. If He can't, He will work out a program where it can be done. He won't just sit back and let His family suffer. There will be a pain in His heart. Sometimes He'll have a hard time to get it all together. But He will provide. What does it tell us? It says in Ephesians chapter 6, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition. And that's providing in these areas. We have a lot of fathers that are trying to provide. Excuse me. In monetary things, and that's all right. But if it's just that, your child will suffer. Let me quote something, a story that a brother gave me since I'm here. You might have heard of it, I don't know. But I was really touched. There was this little boy come to his father. Father was getting ready to work. I'm just going to quote it. I'm not going to read it. And I won't quote it verbatim. But the boy was watching his daddy getting ready for work. And then he said this. He said, "Daddy, what do you make an hour?" Daddy looked at the boy. "Well, what's it of your business?" "Well, I just wondered, what do you make an hour?" "Well, I make $50 an hour." "Oh, okay. Okay. I'm not sure. Now I get it a little mixed up. But anyway, the story goes like this. The little boy managed to scratch together by some hard work to get $50. Then he went to his daddy and said, "Daddy, can I buy an hour of your time?" I had to cry when I read that. Because I was a farmer, and I think my children would have loved at times to buy an hour of daddy's time. And the story said that the daddy was so heartbroken over this that he repented. May God give us a vision that providing is not just money. Providing is to bring a security to our children. To our children. The next one I'd like to think about, I have my basis in Ephesians chapter 6 in verse 1. And that is the word nurture. In Ephesians chapter 6 in verse 1. And no, I'm sorry, I got the wrong one the last time. Yeah, I read that about nurturing. I had been talking first about providing, and that would have been 2 Corinthians 12:14. "Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children." I've often puzzled about that. See, these people drive down the road in a motorhome going on vacation. We are spending our children's inheritance. When I don't think we need to buy some farms and just work and work and work to get every son a farm. I was raised in a little bit of that attitude. But then I found Jesus and found out I won't get a farm. But I do believe, dearly beloved, it's not wrong to plan so that you can provide. I just don't feel that's wrong. That's me. All right? 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4. It's time to close. 1 Timothy chapter 3, in verse 4. What does it say there? That is talking about control. I have to turn to that. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 4. Wait a minute here. I'm wrong. Now, we have a real problem with, I have had too much, I guess, already, with what I saw as control in the church. And I'm not saying there does not need to be some control in the church, but I feel I've somewhat reacted to that because of past experiences. But in Timothy chapter 3 and verse 4, it tells us this: one that it talks about the one who wants to be a bishop, but I'll just take it on overall frame. One that ruleth well in his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. I'm going to be honest with you. I have had the conviction, and I know it doesn't seem to work out. Some of us, when we're young, we really get strong in something like this, and then after we sort of slack off. But I have felt that if we would take scriptures like 1 Timothy here more in an honest way and realize that it disqualifies some of these people that are teaching our gospel, it disqualifies you if the home is not in order. Now, I will say this. Once that child leaves and cleaves, then sometimes things are out of your control. I'll allow that. But when I see one teaching the church who has rebellious children in his home, I say, whoa. I have told my wife quite often, Anna, if that happens with my children, please tell me, Daddy, sit down. Because it puts to non-effect your teaching. Now, I don't know what your circumstances is, and I'm not going to say it disqualifies you as a daddy, but what it does, it sobers you up that you realize your son, your daughter, is in danger. And of that, I'm going to stop this and do this. And it needs to be done. I have heard a bishop tell me that he told his son, if you don't straighten up, you'll destroy my ministry. And I just about lost it. That is one of the worst ways to get your son to see the truth. He'll see right through that. You're trying to protect your reputation. God forbid that we risk the soul of our children for our stupid reputation. When you come before God, God's not going to look what the people thought of you. He's going to look at what your heart thought of God. And we need to get clear there. But we tend to do it. All right. The last one. No, this is not the last one. Oh, I wanted to talk on being partial. Some people have favorite children. Don't ever do that. I told my daughters here not long ago, some of them were together. I said, girls, if I ever showed favoritism, I'm sorry. Don't be partial in your children. You say, well, Abner, one of them is so much easier to love. Then the love of Christ is not in you. Because Jesus loved me, and you talk about somebody that was hard to love when He loved me. So don't be partial. But Michael never did this, and look what this person, this other child is doing, or so and so. That doesn't matter. We have to see beyond that and see their soul. Don't be partial. Oh, I just wanted to turn to scriptures. Pride in the home makes that so hard. When we have pride, that goes back a little to say about my reputation. But when we have pride in our home, those children are either... Fathers, if you're responsible for a wife that likes pretty things, be very careful. I have seen wives who have dressed so beautifully conservative, but their problems showed up in their children.
and their children come around dressed like little angels and all kinds of frivols and frevels. And I have spoken out against it, but it just happens over and over. And all I can say is that I'm convinced it's pride of the mother's heart. Fathers, you can do the same thing when you buy your son a car. Now, we at our home, and I want to talk about that tomorrow, but I'm not saying you have to do like we did. Brother Aiden, you shut me down. He told me I can... Yeah. I want to close. I don't want to keep it long, but there's some things about children, and I know it's not going to help me to talk about it tomorrow, but I'd like to say that partiality and pride, some of these things in our home, we don't realize what it does when it meets its fruit, when the fruit comes out. Couldn't get the word I wanted there. All right, I'm going to close with this thought yet. I just feel I did a very much injustice in this message, but children bring joy. Do you agree?
Yes.
Children bring sorrow. Do you agree? Yes, they do. Now, I can tell you, there was a few times, but they were, I can't even remember when they were. I don't know why or how. I told you, that said this, I don't know when it was, not long ago, that I don't understand God. His ways are so far above mine. I was not an obedient boy at home. But you know, and I only have one boy, I'll be frank, but I never remember of my son or my daughters arguing with daddy. Never. And I was an arguer at home. And my dad would get so frustrated. And when my dad was a sort of an angry man, and he would knock me about the farm and off times rightly, maybe not the right way, but I deserved it. And at 17 years old, I knocked my dad down, said, "Don't you ever touch me again." And I cried. I went down, I went back to my dad when Jesus came to my heart. And I told him, "Dad, I'm so sorry." And at that time, he wasn't ready to hear it. But I know in the latter years that he respected that. And so what I'd like to say is this. In all your teaching and training, which I feel I haven't done a job at all, but in your teaching and training, fathers, learn to crucify yourself and your anger. There are so many daddies that can't get a hold of their anger. And it's devastating in the home. It rips your children apart. Did you ever see your daughters, little daughters, playing doll? I did. I watched them. There was hardly a stick big enough, nor a spank hard enough, nor a cry loud enough for them to train their children. Where did you get it? Now, I have never been a paddling dad like I know some have. I don't know why. I've never paddled my children like some parents do. There are some children, it seems, I got a son-in-law, and his children have a spark of something in them. He says it's cough, and I say it's words. But they have a spark in them that just needs correction again and again and again. And you need to do it, brethren. You need to do it. You can't back off. But when it comes to saying how often you paddle your child, what you use, my daughters can come to me now yet, and they do, and they tell me, "I remember the last time you paddled me." What am I saying? There is no set pattern except in the Bible. Spare the rod, you're going to spoil the child. Oh, I just would have liked to go through some of those scriptures, but it's time to close. And I want to bless you this morning, young fathers. I want to bless you You're in a job that you don't know everything about. I don't care what you say. You don't know everything about it. About the time that you think you do, something horrible will spring up and you'll realize how little I know about the whole thing. But that is good because it keeps us humble. It keeps us humble. You're not a know-it-all when it comes to training your children. Bear with me, brethren. Bless you. I'd just like to let you know where my heart is. And the first part of that message, the message today, if you want to discuss it with me, I'm willing. But I have a burden about what's going on. I feel we're having our eyes closed, and we live in a country where same-sex marriages are being one state after the other is lifting it. The president is saying it's okay, and it's affecting us. When I went to school, I know of one family in our school where there was divorce. And I remember as a young little Amish boy going to public school and my schoolmates telling me, girl's mother and father divorced. And to me it was like he murdered her. Today, it means nothing. And in too many churches, they say, well, now you have to do. God didn't change. God is the same. Yesterday, today, and forever.